From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour will be made in Denver, or maybe Nashville, maybe Philadelphia, or any of the other 17 cities that made Amazon's list of finalists for its future second headquarters. That connection will not be made in Rochester, which did not make the cut. It was always a long shot, and the cities that made the list are larger markets. But that doesn't change the fact that many local leaders put a lot of effort into making the case to Amazon to come to Rochester. That case included tax incentives, among other things. And today's City Lab has a piece examining whether the bidding war for Amazon should have been illegal in the first place. Amazon says, look, they're simply asking cities what they think is worth offering. No one forced anyone to bid for Amazon. And just a couple of hours ago, by the way, Amazon, which is a $500 billion plus company, announced they are hiking the price of a monthly Amazon Prime membership from $10.99 to $12.99 per month. Well, this hour, a conversation about what happened with Rochester's bid, the process, and outside of Amazon, the future of economic development here. Bob Duffy is CEO of the Greater Rochester Chamber of Commerce. Bob, welcome back to the program.
Emily, thanks. Great to be here.
Matt Hurlbut is CEO of Greater Rochester Enterprise. Matt, welcome back to you.
Thanks.
And Alex White is a local organizer, activist, small business founder, and someone who I think has been, I don't know if opposed was the right word. I think you said that there'd be a lot of possible benefit to Amazon coming, but maybe some different views on economic incentives. Fair?
Yeah, I think that's fair, and thank you for having me back.
Well, it's good to have you. Let me start with this. And I'm going to start with Bob and Matt because they were part of the team that put together this bid for Amazon. When did you find out Rochester was not going to be on this list?
Yesterday morning.
You didn't get an advance call?
No.
Did you expect to get any advance warning on that?
Well, I think not necessarily because this process has been so unique. I think we all were hopeful that we would get some type of direct contact, but it's been a very public process, so I'm not surprised in the way it was done.
If someone had asked you last week, give me the odds, give me the honest odds you think we're going to be on the short list, you would have said what?
I think, what were they, 16 to
1? Well, no, 16 to 1 to get the Amazon.
I can say this, the Irish are never totally accurate with betting ads.
Well, so, I know.
Being that.
But even being on the list, did you expect to be on the list?
Yes. In all honesty, my sense all along is that we would be contender, maybe the top 20 or 25. I never said we would be a winner. It really depended what the criteria was. I want to give kudos to Matt Hurlbut, who really quarterbacked our team here locally in connection with his counterpart in Buffalo, Tom Kucharski. It was a great process, great teamwork, great collaboration on this. And, you know, it reinforces how much we have in this region. And we're pretty parochial about Rochester in this region, but we did it in partnership with Buffalo. But we, in the whole process, it just helped us galvanize all the strengths we have here. And it really depended upon what Amazon was looking for. And if you look at the list, as you said, they went to the larger metro areas. And even, take example, New York City and Newark are pretty close. They're probably much closer than we are to Buffalo. Northern Virginia, Montgomery County, and D.C., I have family down there, all very close. So really, some of the areas are almost, you know, 3-1 down there. But I said yesterday, first of all, a little disappointment hearing it, but very, very proud of the effort. And we had a couple of challenges. One was direct international flights. And in our proposal, I think the key issue is proximity to Toronto, because they had direct international flights, and Toronto was one of the contenders. But that the process itself, I thought, was invigorating, enlightening. If anything, it makes us better. And I would say, I think Matt would agree, Moody's putting us number 4. Yeah. The Fortune, the betting site, handicap 16-1. We got a lot of national attention, which I think Matt can point to, which really has driven up interest here for GRE in Rochester.
Yeah, we're busy, and we're involved in a number of projects. We talked about it yesterday. We've had 3 site visits this week, and I agree with Bob. It was a great process, a very collaborative effort. We have good leadership in the business community, political leadership, the support with New York State, and we had a very good story to tell, and we continue to tell that story. I think that's the important thing, is to look forward at what we've got going on here, and the fact that we are all on the same page is very important, especially when companies want to move quickly and make a decision like that. And I would just caution that it's not done. The process is not done. And yes, they've gone down to 20. I did think that we would get in the top 20 or 30. Feedback we had from a group who worked with us on the site selection side was very positive about our proposal. And I think Amazon was as well. So Now we look forward to what comes next. And as they continue to grow, we still have opportunity, I think, for them and others to take advantage of the assets we have.
Okay. And let me also ask you, Matt, do you expect to hear from Amazon directly on exactly why you weren't chosen?
Yes. Yeah.
Do you think that will happen?
Yeah, I think that will happen. Yep. We have a good relationship with them, and we've had good interaction throughout the process, and they've been very direct, which is keeping with their culture. So I do expect to hear back and to talk through the positives and perhaps what they were looking for and the whys as they move forward. In this typical site selection process, you don't always hear that, especially as they move forward and focus on other metros, but I think we'll do that.
If I could add to what Matt said, too. Maybe it's not an HQ2 location here, but keep in mind, Amazon is constantly developing and investing. And there's no doubt they paid attention to our submission. And hopefully down the road, we may see something else. That's why we're never going to criticize Amazon. We have no reason to. I think while we would like to be on that list, we give it our best shot. I think whether it's sports or in life, if you do your best, try your hardest. If you don't win, to me, you still feel proud of what you did. And I'm very proud of our team. And I, you know, for Matt, everybody that was involved, the state, one question comes up about incentives. We don't know what the incentives are. And I could tell you, in all honesty, I have no idea what they are. That was kept very close to the chest, and it was probably done for a competitive reason.
Wait, you don't know whose incentives were?
What our incentives were for Amazon in terms of the state putting forth incentives for any locations.
All right, so hold on. Before we get there, because this is a part that I think has been confusing to some people. Boston is a city that is on Amazon's list. Mm-hmm. They made the cut. And I want to listen to a bit of an interview with former candidate for Massachusetts Governor Evan Falchuk. He's a former business executive and an attorney. He's considering another run for governor. And he was just talking last night about this process, what he had to say about the Amazon bidding process in Boston and Massachusetts and then across the country. Let's listen.
The part that is really worrisome to a lot of people is what's the deal that's been offered to Amazon? What kind of tax breaks are the taxpayers of Massachusetts going to be asked to give to this company that's worth about $750 billion? And that's sort of the amazing thing here. Amazon needs to expand. It's a booming business. It's hugely successful. And instead of using some of the $25 billion in cash it has in its bank account, it's making all these cities around the country compete with each other to subsidize it. And that really is a huge problem. And it's really shameful that all of our leaders around the country, elected officials, have gone out and put in all these secret bids to lure Amazon to come to their city. So we need radical transparency. And I call on all the cities and states that submitted bids to have the guts and really the respect for taxpayers to make those bids public.
Matt, will you make the bid public?
We do not have plans at this point to make our proposal public. And I want to qualify the term bid in the sense that we don't offer tax incentives. So our job was laying out the business case as to why you should invest here, as we do on other site selection requirements as well. So laying out the case in the sense of the technology, the people, the physical assets that we have in our community to support a business like Amazon and others, and then local agencies or state authorities or local authorities provide tax incentives based on total capital investment, job retention creation over a period of time. So
have you seen the full bid that Amazon got?
I have not seen the state incentive
package. Has anybody seen the full? I mean, is there anybody? Bob Duffy and Matt Hurlbut don't know what the full bid is. Does anybody know?
In terms of the actual incentives?
Yes.
No, I think, no. You know, we know our submission.
How can you not know? Who knows? Well, who do I need to call? Who knows?
Well, here's the thing. I mean, and in all honesty, the state is responsible for that. And we may disagree here with some of us at the table, but I will tell you this. I don't think, when you are going through a bid process like this, New York State didn't get it. Now, New York City is still involved, and they're competing with 19 other cities.
Sure.
So I think the issue of clarity and sunshine on this would come after, because New York City is not putting one taxpayer dollar in incentives into it. I would say that if Amazon picked New York City, I doubt New York City would be up in arms that 50,000 jobs are going to come down there.
That's not the point, though. The question is, once this process is over, and Rochester's out now. I mean, you're saying that Rochesterians are not going to get to know what the bid was?
I don't know that, and that's not really my decision. That's up to the governor and to the state of New York and how they process this. And I will back up Bob's point there in the it is confidential, and it is unfortunately. And this is, it's, we may not like the process as it is in site selection, but it is very, very competitive. And as you're doing any deal, as you do in business, you really, you keep those cards as you negotiate.
Sure, but these are tax dollars. Do taxpayers have a right to know what the bid was?
I think taxpayers have a right to know where their money is being spent.
Yes.
And actually, if...
But not how it's being offered to be spent?
I think, and here's the case. If New York City, if I'm the mayor of New York City and a governor of New York State, and we make an offer for Amazon, I would think if people are, if it's accepted, I think that's when, if it's, money is going to be being spent. And I'll tell you what, if you look at the process for New York State, the money does not come up front. It is over time. They pay money after the jobs are created. You have to actually create those jobs in segments to get any money back. So that's how it factors in. There could be some capital grants. But I'll go back to Matt. And I've been a mayor and I've been a lieutenant governor. And I've been in the midst of competition with cities and states around this country. And we can easily, I love when people say, don't offer incentives. We cannot offer any incentives. And you know what? Every one of these companies will go elsewhere. Just like if we're all looking for jobs right now and company A offers us much more and company B nothing, we'll all go to company A. And that's the environment around this country for business right now. And I was saying earlier, Hunts Point Market, the largest public market in the country, is located in the Bronx. My first year in office with the state, New Jersey offered boatloads of money to move this entire Hunts Point Market to the Meadowlands. And we worked very hard to keep them where they were. But every day, states are in our backyard. I was just at a school with Chamber of Commerce executives. One of my classmates is from Texas. And she said, we're in New York State every week. They're here. I mean, I'm all about this full disclosure, but I think the issue
is— But not in this case.
Well, no. Full disclosure, when you are putting forth trying to get the offer, I think if you put out, New York State puts out what they are going to bid, then New Jersey, Pennsylvania, they'll see that, they'll up it some. I think that part is confidential.
So you're saying based on the competition, and I know Alex wants to jump in, I'll get you in a second, but based on the competition, if we were to tell taxpayers, here's what we offered— not just, again, tax incentives, but everything. This was the full proposal to Amazon. That would hurt our competitive skills going forward in other negotiations?
Absolutely.
Yes. Yeah, without a doubt.
Does that outweigh the importance to let taxpayers know how you're bidding with their
dollars? Well, here's the issue here. Bidding versus spending are two different things, I think. So if we are bidding, they haven't spent $1. They're trying to get in the game. But if Amazon came to Rochester, and I would defend Matt because Matt's proposal is not financial incentives. You don't want to give the competition what we have here that they can end up picking off. But the monies, I think if we offered X number of dollars and Amazon came here and they started bricks and mortar, then I honestly think once the decision is made, public does have a right to know.
And here's why I'm asking, though, because there were 238 bids, proposals to Amazon, 238 municipalities, and some pretty outlandish proposals. I mean, if you look at in New Jersey, Governor Chris Christie and legislative leaders said they were going to offer Amazon tax breaks worth $7 billion over the next decade. By the way, that's a public, they're still on the list, Newark, and they're public about what they're offering.
Yeah.
They don't view that as anti-competitive. So they're saying that we're going to offer $7 billion, and New Jersey has a proposed bill that would raise the cap on subsidies from $5,000 to $10,000 for every job Amazon creates. So if Amazon goes to Newark and they create jobs, every time they create a job, they can get up to $10,000 in direct subsidy. That's public knowledge. So that's out there. Philadelphia, they offered $28 million square feet in the city. Amazon said they needed at least 8 million square feet. Philadelphia said, we've got three sites with 28 million. In Dallas, they're talking about $15 billion to build a bullet train from Dallas to Houston and covering the cost for Amazon if they go there. So those are things that are in the public realm, and they feel like we can be public about that. I guess what I want to say is this. I don't know what was bid for Rochester, and I'm sure it wasn't outlandish. I mean, Bob Duffy, Matt Hurlbut, Vinny Esposito, the people involved, Cheryl Denolfo, these are experienced professionals that are probably not offering to build a colony on the moon to fly Amazon every day there. I get that. But we don't know that. And some of the people involved in this bidding process are elected officials, and some are not. And do taxpayers get any say over how their dollars are being bid? I don't understand why, if taxpayer dollars are involved, every bid shouldn't be public.
Well, just I have Alex jump in, but I just would tell you that I honestly do not know what New York State bid. It was going to be across the board for all. There were several locations in New York State. Don't know. And, you know, New Jersey came out very high, and they were really high in the beginning. That's their choice. They want to say that.
To be public.
Yeah, and you know what?
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, New York comes out really low, and maybe they get knocked out of the box early on. I mean, I don't know. But I would tell you this. New York State does not offer a boatload of money up front. They offer incentives based on jobs created. There are some capital funds that usually get put forth. But I've dealt with other states trying to keep companies here in my last job with the state. There are other states, Florida being one, that will build an entire factory turnkey for somebody to walk into. I think other states often offer a whole lot more. We would have loved it. Matt and I would love to have a free bullet train between Rochester and Buffalo, because that was one of the issues of connecting the two cities with our proposal. And we thought if that ever happened, years down the road before that would ever happen. But, you know, Texas may be in a different financial position to offer that. But again, I think just philosophically, we're all for full disclosure. I think the only issue here is bid versus decision, because during a bid, there's nothing being spent. And I found as an elected official, if people don't like your decisions, you won't be in office very long. So I think that's one of the things that I think any executive it has a reasonable bid. And I'm talking about governors and people making decisions, and can draw a company of that size in, because Amazon will bring so many other ancillary benefits to an HQ2. So I think if you really measure the economic impact. But we can go the other way and say none. And I was talking to Alex before. If they make incentives illegal, just make them illegal in all 50 states.
Well, that's actually part of what the CityLab article talked about. Because if you look, for the people who are uncomfortable about incentives, what Matt and Bob are talking about is absolutely true. We could sit back and say, we're going to be pure. We're not going to offer incentives. And then everyone else will, and you will lose in that. What CityLab is examining today is, well, how could we get sort of a national standard where states don't have to be Puritans about this? One way is the Interstate Commerce Clause. There's been a couple of lawsuits in the last 20 years about this. They generally get stuck in the courts. Another is a proposal that says essentially there is a federal bill that would levy a 100% tax on any direct tax incentive, which essentially wipes out tax incentives altogether. Now, Art Rolnick is a University of Minnesota economist, and he basically said the federal government could levy a tax of 100% on any money the company receives from a state in the form of incentives. Other incentives would be fair game. Cities could give away property, workforce development grants, and they could still promise to improve infrastructure. I don't think it's going to happen, Bob, but absent that, we're probably not going to see the game change, right?
But Evan, I think you could take incentives for construction and companies. How about sports teams? I was involved in negotiations with the Buffalo Bills, the state, Erie County, and the Buffalo Bills with the stadium in Orchard Park. And I'll tell you what, thanks to our governor, and then thanks to the Pegula family who bought the team, there is no doubt in my mind, without some of the things that went into that negotiation, they'd be leaving for another location. Because sports teams demand money a lot. They get new stadiums built, and people make decisions whether they want to do it or not. But I think the impact, people are killing themselves to get an NFL team or an NBA team or Major League Baseball in their communities, and they don't come free either. It is a bidding process. And Terry and Kim Pegula bid very high for the Buffalo Bills. If they did not, maybe in 5 years they would be someplace else. So it comes down to you can't say don't go that way and compete, because it is a competition. And I understand the philosophical differences people have. Believe me, I've been here. I've listened to people in my previous jobs, but I also understand the landscape out there. We're in a fight every day. And I thought this fight here, even with the incentives that were offered, whatever they would be, we didn't get the cut for Amazon. And I think Amazon could have been transformational for the Buffalo-Rochester region in some ways. It's not a perfect fix, but that many jobs coming in. We'd have direct flights to Seattle probably rolling in within a week afterwards. But in the end, I think we just go back, and we are very competitive thanks to the assets we have here. But again, I think for every project that once the money starts being dispensed, I think it's pretty obvious. And I also want to say, not every project is a win. not every business that goes into business, I was asking Alex on the way up here, he's been in business for a long time, successful business leader. A lot of businesses fold after 1 or 2 years. So, you know, sometimes investments get made that no matter what you do, it doesn't work out. And sometimes these economic development investments, as much as you try, they don't work out.
All right, so Matt, and then Alex, then to the phones. Go ahead.
On this point, I just want to say one thing, and this is actually, site selectors will tell you the same thing. And obviously, this is a bit of an outlier, but we do not lead with incentives. So when we talk to companies about expanding here, coming to this region, we talk about their business plan, the assets that we have, and the incentives are the closing argument, if you will. We do not lead with the state is going to pay you X amount to sure. come here, nor will the localities. We talk about their business, the talent, the assets that we have here in this region, how they match, how they can help them be successful. And then the incentive piece is the closing piece. And I will say the state does announce that when those deals are made. So, and I understand exactly what you're saying. Just like Bob, I know what you're talking about. Unfortunately, we are playing the cards we are dealt. And you do have to put your best foot forward. But again, we don't lead with incentives. And typically, site selectors who do this for a living will tell you, a project that leads with that is not necessarily a good project.
Alex White, go ahead.
On the transparency issue, you know, this is really the public who are in charge of our government and to keep the public out, you're basically asking them to buy furniture without knowing the price. Would you go down to a store and say, I like that, send it to my house with no idea what the price is? I mean, it once the bid is in, it's not like you can go back and change it. They had a deadline. After that deadline, it doesn't hurt to know. It's not like one of the bids could have gone and changed their bid because now New York State had announced after the deadline that they were giving out so much. And one of the problems is the group that's doing the bid knows what's out there. They can look at Startup New York and say, 000, zero income tax, zero property tax, zero business tax, zero corporate tax, and say, that's the baseline we're looking for. They don't need to talk to Matt about what incentives are. They know Comita is going to come through and void all of their taxes. They know Comita is going to void their sales tax and all construction. They know this is going to happen because it always happens. So when a company comes and starts talking to Matt, they've done their research. The site selector knows what New York offers and knows that they can expect that if they're bringing the right thing. The question is here, why on earth does this not part of the information the public has a right to know? And there is actually a case being done about a FOIL request that was denied for what New York State is offering, and there's solid legal reasons on why it should be available.
Okay, what I'm surprised to hear is that Matt and Bob don't know what New York State offered, and I take Matt's point that you want to lead with your best local assets, mm-hmm. and then the incentives are your closing argument. But shouldn't you know what New York State did decide to go with in the Amazon case? I'm surprised you don't know. Why don't you know?
Well, I think it's just the way that we've traditionally operated in this environment. And it is, I think it's also important to say that this is the part of the reason why for New York State, now others have done different things, but part of the reason why, and I would agree, is that at this point, this is just the first part of the Amazon process. This is not the final decision point. And as you go from 20 to 4, there will continue to be a negotiation. And it doesn't, it's actually not good for taxpayers, and I would argue, to know at this point, because you don't want to start with New Jersey at $7 billion, so then New York State meets it at $7 billion. So then you go to 8, so then you go to, and yes, ideally you would drop out and say, we're not going to do that, but you don't want to get into a bidding war on infrastructure and other things. So there is a reason why that's not done publicly. Is it perfect? No, but it is the art of negotiating and trying to make these projects come to fruition. And they are performance based, so the company has to perform in order to secure the benefits.
All right, so Alex, a quick comment on that, and then I'll take a phone call. Go ahead, Alex.
You know, study after study on the IDAs, the Industrial Development Agencies, have shown that they fail to meet, in many cases, the job creation or retention requirements. So you're sitting there telling me that it's all performance-based, but even state studies on this have shown that we give the money without following through on checking to see if they're reaching the criteria.
That's not what I hear from people like Vinny Esposito.
I can address that, too, because there's clawback clause. The point is, New York State, and here's what, actually, we're at a disadvantage because other states, as you, we don't offer a bullet train up front. I mean, it's based on job creation. And not every project meets those job requirements. I mean, it is not. But every contract that is valid should have a clawback clause. I know that, you know, the city, county, state uses those, and there are corporations that do pay back money who don't create those jobs. That provision. And as we debate this, I think we're, in many ways, so we're just very clear. What Matt and I are saying is we have no issue of disclosing once that money is going to be spent. It's just it's the competitive process up front. And I would venture a guess that the Empire State Development Office here doesn't know either. We don't know. I mean, honestly, if I knew, I would say I can't say it. I'm telling you, we flat out do not know what they were. But I'll defend their right to keep it confidential until there is an agreement. And believe me, once it happens, if New York City gets picked, however, it will come out. And who knows, New Jersey? I mean, New Jersey came out really strong in the beginning. I remember seeing that, and that was like out of the box, first one, huge. Who knows where other states are, and who knows if that'll be the only case. But I'll go back to Matt's point. We pushed affordability, brain power, our UVAR, RIT. We have so many assets here, so many great legacy companies. We have a lot of things here that are just tremendous assets. We don't push the money part. That's not the state was in charge of all that. That's they hold the incentives. Not that maybe if it came here, Comita and the city or counties would get involved. Or in Buffalo.
A lot of assets, right?
Huh? Mm-hmm.
A lot of assets. But one more point for Bob, and then we're going to go to Tim in Pittsburgh. Hang there, Tim. Bob is making a point on all the good things that are there, and I'm with you. But there are some people like Alex and people like Evan Falchuk in Boston and making these points saying, all bids should be public. It's taxpayer money. We should know what you're offering. Others are saying, look, we wanted Amazon, and you tried hard, but you didn't make the cut. I want to know what you bid to know how do we evaluate you. Maybe we think you didn't offer enough here. You know, we can talk all we like about how well everybody worked together, but ultimately you're not on that list. Should we see what the proposal was so we can evaluate whether we think it was a good bid?
Well, in terms of the financial stuff, we don't have that. And in terms of what we put forth in our bid here, I think there's a lot of information that I can't speak for Matt, but I know as he's competing with site selectors around the country, he might not want to put out publicly because, believe me, I'm on probably 15 different news papers every morning early. I scan everything like they do. And I'm sure in Matt's world, those site selectors, they want to know what GRE is doing. Any comment publicly, anything put out there, they're on it, which may help, you know, their processes or their competition.
So transparency is a disadvantage for you, Matt.
Well, I think it's a matter of the realization that it's very competitive. So we have got certain things, and you can look at our website, how we promote the region, the assets that we have here in the region. There are certain things where we take a deeper dive on technologies and our development partners talk about lease rates and things like that. And so you don't want to disclose certain things that you want to do to help a company expand here because, frankly, in my case, I will use that. So I'm well aware of what other communities offer and what other states do, and I do competitive intelligence, and I use that. And I will beat them and bludgeon them with everything. It's a competitive environment, and I use the information the same way someone would use it against me.
I got to get to the phones to Tim, but Alex, keep it tight. Go ahead. I know you want to jump in.
Yeah. By the time the proposal is done, it's too late. Once it's accepted and started, if you've offered too much or too little, okay, if the public would have said, no, you should have offered more and gotten maybe more jobs out of it, you know, it's too late at that moment. And this stuff is going to be analyzed by colleges, by economic professors, and they're going to come out with what the actual return on the investment is. And the sooner that information is available, the better it is to everybody. And pushing it off until the second or third or fourth year or even fourth month of the company being here does not serve the public's good. And sure, it may make it harder for you, Matt, but we're talking about public money. Mm-hmm. And the public has a right to know.
All right, so we got a difference of opinion on there, and we've hit that plenty. Let me grab Tim in Pittsford and start working through more of your feedback. Go ahead, Tim.
Hey, Evan, Alex is right, and I'm almost throwing up in my mouth right now. And let me preface this by saying I'm not against tax incentives. I think they work sometimes. I think they don't work sometimes, and I'm not a fan of big developers getting them on a project that you know is going to make a ton of money. But this is literally my money and everyone's money that's sitting in that studio right now. And for Matt to say that traditionally it's just the way it's been done about not disclosing tax incentives until negotiations start. I mean, when I go to a bank and ask for money, they want to know exactly what I'm doing with that money before they cut me a check. And they should, because it may be a lot of money and I'm going to have to pay them back. And secrecy does not get you a congratulations. It breeds disdain, upset, and I think rightfully so. Just because something has been done this way for a while doesn't make it right and doesn't mean it can't change. And Alex is right when he says, you know, the public may have said, listen, this city's offering this. Why didn't we offer that much? Just because you don't want to show your hand for some reason? I really don't get it.
So, Tim, let me just give you one little counterpoint, and then I'll let our guests respond here to see what you say about this. I just got an email from a listener who says, I wonder if it's better to not know how much we bid for Amazon. It may hurt us in future negotiations. A future company, not Amazon, might be able to say, we know you offered Amazon this financial package. We want what you offered them. Even if they are not the same value of an Amazon HQ, they would now have an advantage over us, end quote. What do you think about that, Tim?
Well, I would hope that you have the right person negotiating, saying, listen, to the company that's coming in, Amazon is worth this much. They can provide this many jobs, this much money and revenue. You can provide this much. Why should we offer you more for an inferior product? And you don't want to lose a company, but if a company goes somewhere else and doesn't make that and doesn't make the profits or help out the community like an Amazon would have, then you should feel okay with what you did. I mean, if you're negotiating, you're not just automatically writing the biggest check because someone wants to come into your company. You have to know what you're doing. I would assume Bob and Matt know what they're doing as far as offering certain things to certain companies. And God, I hope our state knows what they're doing. Half the time they don't, with offering incentives, especially locally, offering incentives to certain companies or certain builders, knowing what return on investment they're going to get. If it's not going to live up to someone else, then why should we offer them more money anyways?
All right, Tim, thank you. I appreciate the phone call. Matt, so Tim's main point here is negotiations are private in a lot of situations, but this is literally taxpayer dollars. It's literally Tim's money and yours and mine, and that's why it may be uncomfortable or difficult for competition's sake, but it should always be transparent. What do you say to that?
Well, I think it goes back to the earlier point about the negotiation, and I think it is important to know in the system, you know, you can go back and argue that the programs that are offered are passed by the state legislature. Those people are elected by the public. So the budgets that are set for those programs, whether it be Excelsior, the Economic Development Fund, Startup New York, that was publicly debated, publicly passed by the legislative body and the elected officials of the state. So taxpayers do have a say in that process. And we can argue about whether we should or should not do that. I'll point out also that Bob and I do not oversee these programs. But
sure,
be that as it may, those programs are approved through a publicly elected process. And what happens is the agencies, the staff for the agencies, whether it be local or statewide, then use those programs that are approved by the legislature to negotiate with the company. Excuse me. There is a cost-benefit analysis that is provided in each case. It is a negotiation, so it starts at one point and may end in another, but there is a contract that is signed, and the company is required to meet those, as Bob talked about before, to meet certain outcomes and has an obligation to providing funding and meeting its goals, or the funds are not provided. So CMEDA is a little different, and the IDA studies that have been done, we can argue about that as we want, and none of those folks are here. So, but you know, our local IDAs are very good about their job creation measures using local labor and so forth. And it is, I'm never a big fan of saying this is the way it's always been done, but there is unfortunately, an art to this, and we can argue about the validation and use of tax dollars and when information can be relayed. But I think it is, it does put the public in a sense, if you get out and say we're offering $2 billion or $100,000 and it becomes a public discourse, the companies frankly won't come.
If I could add this.
They will not, they don't want to subject themselves to that. Oftentimes, Amazon, again, was very unique. Typically, we don't know who the company is. And if you start the process in that way, other states will beat you to the punch and we're out.
But once you start with the assumption that we have to get every job, then the cost you're paying for it is irrelevant. But, you know, John Oliver did a hysterical thing in which he said, you know, between Kansas City, Missouri and Kansas City, Kansas, Kansas could have offered everyone who moved there a brand new Ferrari and allowed them to drive around $30 million of burning money and still save the state $20 million. And the problem is, if you assume we have to get every job, then the amount that we pay for it's irrelevant. But if you look at like the Amazon job, just for a second, we're talking 50,000 jobs. Those new 50,000 people are going to have kids, and those kids are going to want to go to school. And we're looking at like 30,000 kids possibly going to a new elementary school at the same time. We don't have the capacity for that.
You don't. You wouldn't want to grow with 50,000 jobs?
No. Listen to this. I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is, who's paying? Because an elementary school has about 500 or so, large one has 500 kids in it.
Who's funding what's
needed? We're going to need to build 50 new elementary schools at least. Who's funding that more than $1 billion of new construction if they're not paying taxes? And we're not looking at the long-term costs when we go through these analyses. They don't include that. And the question is, and this is a known cost. I mean, 50,000 people are going to have kids. The average is 1.14. That's like 62,000 children. It's fairly easy to figure out what the long-term needs will be, but that's not considered in whether that, and when we get down to it, this cost is going to fall on Fairport and it's going to fall on Hilton because these are where the people are going to live. Wherever they live, they're going to need new schools, and they're not getting any tax revenue to build these.
Okay, Bob?
I think if we had 50,000 people come, and say we Buffalo and Rochester split, and we never had any discussion in terms of how many would go where, but I would say if 50,000 jobs and people came to Rochester, and I'll speak for jobs, that brings us almost back to where Kodak was back when I grew up, at 65,000 jobs. And whatever incentives were offered, and there's calculations, there's economists that work on this. Matt and I aren't involved in that part, but if all of us were brand-new Amazon employees, one of the things Amazon does is offer such a high wage to some, they pirate other industries and come in. But we're going to be buying houses. We're going to be paying property taxes. We're going to be buying gas and food. And so I think there is an inflow. But going back to, and I think it was said earlier, first of all, in these negotiations, in most cases that I've been involved with, everybody signs a non-disclosure agreement. So once we start the process, if you notice, we didn't say a word about this process. Nothing public. We just couldn't. We would violate that. We'd knock you out of the box immediately. The next part is that I think Matt raised it before. Believe me, I would go out when I was in office in the city. We would do City Hall on the road. You go out and listen to people. I'm all about getting input and listening. But if every construction project that we would bring to the state, city, where we put out a public form, how much do you want to give to this one? I think that, first of all, it's great to get input. People would not agree on it. And number two, I think we would probably just never get the process done. We elect people. You elect city council members, mayors, legislators, governors, presidents, Congress, Senate. They're elected to make decisions. And I would say that if Amazon picks New York City, or if they picked Rochester and Buffalo, before $1 was ever expended, it has to be approved. The governor doesn't sign off on $1 billion. It's something that's approved by our elected officials. So there is a process in place for that. And, you know, then if we don't like that, we can. And I don't know what they offered. So I can't say if it went too high or too low. Nobody knows. But there's a process before it would be, before the money is even spent, it's going to go for approval. It'll be debated in both houses. It'll be public. Reporters will be there. I think people can weigh in. Call your senator or your assembly member. I think that there's going to be – and then people have to vote on it. So it's not just something that just goes off and is passed on. And I also want to say for most state projects that I've seen, even a lot local – there's a lot of local developers here. Some get tax breaks, but usually the state looks for a 4 or 5 to 1, private to public. So if we're going to create a project, people, there's many developers here who come in with a big chunk of their own money. I won't say in every case, in every municipality, but I think that's one of the requirements the state pushes for. They want to know what is the private investment. And then the state, I will tell you, I think I said it before, the way the state gives money is not something, you know, we're a little behind other states because it's after the fact more often than not. There are grants that are given up front, but a lot of it is based on job creation. And while things may be announced, I can tell you the money has not gone into someone's hands for a long time. Sometimes it's 2 or 3 or 4 years before it does that. And it's they have metrics. And I go back to the clawback decisions. And there are other states, as you mentioned, New Jersey, will offer huge chunks of money up front. They will win more often than we will. But our state really doesn't do that. And there's still enough criticism for projects as they exist today.
I want to ask Bob and Matt just 2 short questions. We'll get back to your phone calls. There's still a lot to work through here. So on the criticism side, Matt Stoller is a fellow at the Open Markets Institute. And he want to know, are there any elected leaders anywhere criticizing Amazon? Well, it turns out there's one that we know of. It's Congressman Keith Ellison, who was nearly the Democratic Party chair nationally. And Congressman Ellison tweeted the following, quote, "Tax breaks to Amazon promised by New Jersey, $7 billion. Tax breaks promised by Illinois, $2 billion. Something is deeply wrong with our economy and democracy when local governments offer up their tax base to a corporation already worth more than $500 billion. End quote. That's Keith Ellison. So what Bob and Matt are saying is this is the game. We have to do our best within it. Is the game broken?
Well, I think it's the issue is that's the competitive nature. If it is, I think Alex said before, if these were outlawed across the country, then you have an even playing field. And for Keith Ellison,
should it be outlawed, though?
Well, here's the thing. I think you can create a national even playing field. I don't think we're on even playing field with Texas and Georgia and some of the other states. So I would like a much more even playing field. I'm sure Matt would, because some other states kind of come in with a whole lot more than we can offer and sometimes take those jobs away. But make it even. And you know what? Everybody has a chance to say, no, we could have passed on Amazon. Just say not worth it. I'll tell you what, the criticism would have been crazy. The word we're talking about today would be drowned out by, are you kidding me? And I've said it before. If you don't take swings, you don't get any hits. We have to try. We never said we're going to win
this. Okay, I'm with you. But Matt, is the game itself broken? That you have to operate? I know you got to operate within that game. Mm-hmm. Is the game broken?
I just don't know that you can, I don't know that you'll ever come to a satisfactory answer on that. So is it broken? Could we do better? From a public policy perspective, you can always do better. I don't know that it's broken. And really, the thing I'd like to focus on as we talk about Amazon is not the tax incentives, but really the story that we have. And again, being positive about what's going on in Rochester. We are very busy right now. We're working more projects than we ever have. That has nothing to do with incentives. That has to do with the outstanding innovation, talent, the assets of this community, the partnership within this community. We're on the same page. We've got great connectivity in this community, and it's something to be proud of. And I think we do ourselves a disservice by having, focusing on something that, frankly, we can't control, and that's not a dismissal of the point. But my job is to market and promote this region for additional capital investment by private corporations. And I can tell you, we're very busy with technology-related companies. We've got very smart people who are working very hard in this community, doing some amazing things. And we have other opportunities. We've had 3 CEOs in the region this week, and I think that's significant. And I understand the concern that many people feel when we talk about incentives, but it is part of the process. We have to be competitive. We have to play in the game. And frankly, my perspective is we have to play to win. And we want to win. And I think that we've got a great story to tell, and we see many wins coming in the future.
If I could add one thing, it's not broken. It is the market. And one of my old colleagues, Carlos Carbolata, said it best at one point. The market will always adjust. And the market right now, this is what we're in. And Amazon is as successful as they are. Give them credit. As big as they are, look at the interest they generate around this country from this process. 238 communities put in. Everybody's on their edge until yesterday. 20 more are in. I mean, they've really, certainly as a business enterprise, which is really disrupting the retail industry, they've done their job. But that's the market. And we, and you know, 235 could pass. And maybe three or four go in, and I'll tell you what, every one of those communities that would have passed would have been roundly criticized for not even trying and getting
out. Okay, Alex, quick, go.
The we're not even mentioning the fact that we want to bring retail downtown. And Amazon is actually probably at the moment the largest company preventing brick-and-mortar retail from coming into businesses. The inability, they are actually crushing brick and mortar businesses. And you're offering, you know, we're going to offer them billions of dollars. And you know, it's going to have an effect on other local businesses in our area.
Alex, on that thought, I think Robert in Fairport's going to fall over dead agreeing with a member of the Green Party. But Robert, do you agree with that?
I would completely agree with that. I think the entire process is revulsive. I think that Amazon benefits unfairly because they're not paying, you know, the people that buy their products are not paying sales taxes because of the way the sales tax laws are being constructed. They're also not contributing to property taxes in many locations. Amazon is the number one job-killing machine in this country and is killing brick-and-mortar retail, and to try to subsidize this is just, it's insane.
Robert, thank you. Alex, that's kind of the point you're making, yes?
Exactly. And, we're, you know, if a brick-and-mortar store said, you know, I want to expand, I want to add 2 employees, where's their billion? It's not there. They can't get anything for that. If 50 brick-and-mortars all wanted to do that, there's still no money for it.
Well,
but if someone came in and said, I want a 50-job retail thing coming in here, you're offering them money.
All right,
you're killing local businesses by doing this.
All right,
hold on.
So when we talk about the size of the company and Amazon destroying local business, some people say, what about using antitrust laws to prevent Amazon from holding cities, quote-unquote, hostage? Top antitrust lawyer Christine Varney said, it is extremely difficult to use the antitrust laws against the top tech company in the country that drives the American economy. Here's the catch. She said that in 1997 about Microsoft. So in the last several decades, there have been essentially, the U.S. government has given up on fighting monopolies. So let me ask Bob and Matt that. Is our economy dominated by too few companies, and does that hurt smaller companies?
Well, I'll go back. I think, you know, Alex makes a point that, and I think it's across the board, they're, you know, Amazon itself is a very disruptive business. They're changing the landscape, but so are other things changing. Country clubs, the retail landscape, the business landscape is changing. People's habits are changing, what they want to do, how they want to spend their money. So I think, again, the market defines that. And I would agree. I mean, I would always want to go to my neighborhood hardware store before I would go to a big box store. I mean, we still support local business. We all try and do that. But, you know, we could debate philosophically, but I would have to say, no matter where people stand, I think Matt and I would have to agree. If we have a chance to bring a couple thousand jobs in this region, we're going to try very hard to do that. And if we don't, I think we're remiss. But I don't disagree. I mean, I don't think we're philosophically disagreeing here. I think maybe it's more the process. And in the end, we didn't get it. So there's nothing happening, not happening here that didn't happen before. But I would defend our right to put our proposal and try as hard as we could to get there. And I think in the end, also, we are so strong here for so many different reasons. We're going to get other people. And you know what? 50,000 jobs would be great. But if we get to maybe 10 companies with 5,000 jobs each were there, or 20 companies with 25, you know, we every day, and I'll give, you know, Matt and his team credit, they are the recruiting arm for this area. We try and help what we can, but maybe keep people here, help people prosper. I think we all have to align ourselves. And I, you know, Alex is a very successful small business owner, been over 20 years in business, and I think it's kudos to him for being in business. So I don't disagree one bit with being, you know, unfairly hit with some of these things. But I look at the businesses that have closed, and I mean, there has been a lot of changes. I mean, in terms of small business hardware, I mean, bigger boxes, they do come in. They do dominate the landscape in some areas. But I know a lot of people that would rather go to a small neighborhood store that they know the owner and the people and their kids work there before they go. So it comes down to preferences, and people have a choice.
But Alex is saying those small neighborhood stores won't exist anymore if policy doesn't change. We can try to get Amazon, and when Amazon comes, they're participating in making sure those small stores don't exist anymore. Do you disagree?
Well, I don't know that that's the case in the way retailers can sell through Amazon. But I think the point is, like Bob said, it's driven by the market. And the other thing I would point out is that we have more people working in this community today than we did when our big three, if you will, were in their heyday. So we should also realize that as we talk about the size of the company and the opportunities that are here, 97% of employees in this region work at firms that are 100 or less. We continue to accelerate in patent generation. We're number one in STEM degrees. We punch well above our weight. And that's the thing to be proud of is to focus on what we have and what we can build off of. And supporting the companies that are here is very important. 80% of economic development is secured by having companies that are existing and growing. It's also worth noting that companies that are between $1 to $50 million in revenue and 10 to 99 employees account for 36% of the jobs in a community. And so we want to do what we can to help them grow. And that's by working together and creating a playing field that supports their growth here. So as much as we're talking about Amazon and what may or may not transpire on the incentive part, I really want to make sure that we understand the great things that we have going for us in this community and leverage those so that more companies can come here and grow.
But I agree that there are great things in
20
Rochester.
20 seconds, we're going to close. Go ahead.
I agree there are great things in Rochester, but the incentives actually warp the market because the incentives are only available to one particular side, and so the market is not fair in any way. And this constant interruption with cash to one side actually has hurt small businesses across the board, hurt our downtown, will continue to do so. And it's not the market competing. It's now corruption of the market by these incentives.
David tweets at us and says, I was in meetings all day yesterday with an Italian company looking at Rochester to open a manufacturing and assembly plant. While incentives were mentioned, it was a low priority for them. Access to workforce was number one. That's from David. And by the way,
we were in that same meeting, different meetings yesterday, and we're all trying.
And by the way, when we talk about transparency, for those who are frustrated, this is not unique to Rochester. There were 238 proposals. Cleveland City Hall just released a statement to the Cleveland Plain Dealer, which sent a Freedom of Information request, and they said, we're going to try to review with our legal team if anything is releasable, but they want to keep certain things as protected business trade secrets. That's Cleveland's proposal. So that's happening across the country. A lot of tough questions, and I appreciate Matt Hurlbut from GRE. Always good to have you. Thanks for being here. Bob Duffy from the Greater Rochester Chamber of Commerce. Thank you, Bob.
Thank you, sir.
Alex White, thanks for being here. Appreciate it
as
well.
You're welcome.
Short break. More connections coming up.